This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here, live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. It's the first of the month, and joining me to give the inside scoop of the latest news of your favorite streaming service is editor-in-chief of Extremist, Rob Toledo. Thanks for joining me, Rob.
Thanks for having me.
Could you tell me a little bit about yourself? How did you get into being with the Extremist?
Sure, yeah. I guess it's not that embarrassing. I'm sure this is pretty common, but as with most people these days, I watch a lot of Netflix. So, you know, it just became kind of an interest of mine, and then all these other services started kind of popping up, and I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. And me and a friend, my partner Jacob, we decided let's start a website about this. And, you know, we did that in about 2015, and, you know, extremist.com, and our whole focus is pretty much just the streaming industry that just keeps getting bigger and bigger and more interesting. You know, three or four years ago, you know, most consumers probably had only heard of Netflix, and then all of a sudden now we're talking Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and the HBO's two different streaming services. And, you know, now there's live TV streaming services. And, you know, I think there's dozens, if not hundreds now. And so our job has gotten a lot more complicated trying to keep our heads straight covering them all.
It's so funny. You're right. Like, there's DirecTV and a bunch of other like cable networks that do this now. Does that mean that you guys cover network programming too?
That's an interesting question. I think that we'll cover network programming in the sense that, like, if joining a streaming service, if, let's say, for example, NBC's The Good Place is now on Netflix, the first season, which is a phenomenal show. We really enjoyed that one. You know, we'll talk about that. On NBC, it's a little bit murkier as to whether or not we would just cover it standalone. Of course, as you mentioned, though, all these networks are creating their own streaming services, you know, to individualize and kind of own all their own content on the streaming services of their own. So with that, yeah, I think we've noticed an increase in kind of how much we have to cover, you know, oh, NBC has their own streaming service and CBS has their own streaming service. And so with that, yeah, we've definitely seen an increase in how much we cover network programming.
Earlier this month, you wrote an article about how Netflix library is growing in every other country but the U.S. Could you just give a quick synopsis? Why is that?
Yeah, sure. Netflix has been in the U.S. for a long time. You know, I think they started in the late 90s as a DVD delivery service. You know, and then they launched their streaming service, I think, kind of in the mid-late 2000s. And that was basically just in the U.S. You know, and that library kind of kept growing and growing and growing until, I think, if memory serves, we wrote a report in 2015 about how back in 2012 that was kind of the peak Netflix library size. I think there was a library at the time, maybe a little bit less. As network TV and the owners of all this content have sort of caught on to what Netflix is doing, they've reevaluated how much it's worth to give TV shows to Netflix or give movies to Netflix. And kind of throughout the years, over, you know, especially since 2012 to now, a lot of these content owners have said, wait a minute, we can charge people ourselves and then offer a streaming service with this content on it. And so with that, we've seen a lot of peel back from the Netflix catalog. I think, you know, like I was saying, it was about 12,000 or a little bit under that in 2012. I think we're like in the mid 5,500s now, like 5,500 or so total titles on the Netflix library. And honestly, that number looks like it's going to keep going down. There was a big announcement recently that, like, you know, Fox is basically planning on pulling all of their content from Netflix. On the other side of that, you know, Netflix early 2016 launched in every country in the world with a few exceptions. I think China was one of them, and there's a couple others. We took a look and we ran some analysis on how many titles were in each of those countries, and it was paltry compared to the United States. You know, it was like, a country in Eastern Europe would have 1,100 titles on it. As Netflix has gone heavily after growing their subscriber base internationally, they've done a lot of focus around, okay, what type of content can we bring to these libraries in these countries that will attract new subscribers? So with that, those libraries are growing. You know, I think in the article we mentioned that, you know, almost every single country went up except the United States, which went down 1%. You know, some countries have seen growth as much as 200-300% total library size, where, you know, there's others that, you know, in Europe and then some other countries that have had Netflix a bit longer, that it hasn't grown quite as quickly, but it was interesting to see.
Is that why Netflix has a lot of original programming?
Yeah, good question. I think that there's two reasons for that. One is, you know, as I was mentioning, everyone's kind of recognizing, hey, the third-party content owners are recognizing, we're competing with Netflix at this point, so we're pulling all this content from the Netflix library. With that in mind, Netflix can protect itself kind of by taking more of an HBO approach, where it's more heavily focused on developing that original content. So I think you're right. It has a lot to do with it. Another reason, too, is, and we've found out kind of as we've been covering this industry for a while, is international streaming rights are extremely complicated. So if you get the rights for a show in the United States to stream, that could be completely different in Canada or, you know, any of the countries in South America or Europe or Africa or Asia, anywhere. It's going to be different content owners in a lot of these different areas, meaning you have to negotiate different contracts for all that different content, and that's extremely complicated for, you know, for Netflix to do. If they go out and create this original content and own the rights to it, well, that's not a problem anymore. And so they're able to basically create a show like Stranger Things and distribute it globally at, you know, basically a little, you know, without having to deal with all that, you know, contract negotiation, and especially without having to be worried that, you know, the content owner is going to come back one day and go, never mind, you guys can't do this anymore, you know. If Netflix own it, they, you know, they control it.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm just curious, though, is there any original programming for other countries like that we may not see, or is it just going to be like Netflix says, oh, it's for everybody?
You know, so interesting question. There actually have been examples where for, what was that show, House of Cards, you know, kind of Netflix's golden goose when they first started launching original content. They originally, before Netflix was available in some countries, they would sell off the rights to House of Cards to other companies in those countries. So when Netflix launched globally, there was this weird transition where a show that Netflix had created was not actually available on Netflix in some of these countries. With that, I think Netflix's main goal here with all this new content, though, is certainly to create, you know, a unified library, and especially being able to create a new show that has a global reach. However, I was talking to somebody at Netflix a little bit ago, and they had mentioned that one of their big strategies for, you know, the coming couple years is going to be kind of focused on like niche content, especially in these other countries where, you know, a show that might not do very well in the United States or in, you know, England might be targeted very specifically to an audience in India or, you know, South Africa, who knows? And they had mentioned that, you know, the focus there is to target countries where they're trying to really develop a strong, you know, subscriber base and create content very specifically to those audiences.
Usually Netflix has like, they always have some good programming, but there are a couple shows where they have missed the mark. And Business Insider had developed a list of the 11 worst Netflix original shows. And I think the number one was Disjointed, which I was just like, I've never heard of it. I'm so shocked. Like, I don't even remember it being there.
I mean, isn't it true that when you log into Netflix now, you look at it, there's so many Netflix originals on the library on that front page library catalog. It's like, wow, I didn't even know they were making half this stuff. It's very hard to keep up with. Yeah. But yeah, I saw that article. It was interesting. You know, I think Netflix is, there's probably two answers to this question, I think, that are interesting. One, I think Netflix kind of, at the mandate of Reed Hastings, their CEO, who's come out and said, he actually said to the press recently, he was like, I want us to fail more. I want us to take more risks, because that's how you end up getting a big winner. You know, I think if you play it too safe, their library doesn't grow fast enough. I think you end up risking missing a big opportunity with a hit show. You know, everyone's kind of on the hunt for the next Game of Thrones, of course. You know, and so I think Netflix says, you know, there's a lot of risk in trying to find that. And so with that, we'll take some duds. We'll take a few hits in the you know, the media review cycles, if it means potentially landing a big one. The other thing, too, is, you know, in that Business Insider article, I think they ranked it by Rotten Tomatoes score, which is a great metric. I think, you know, it's very telling. But at the same time, sometimes that can be misaligned with audience reception, right? So how Rotten Tomatoes works is, you know, they basically combine all the reviews of critics and they give it a score based off of those reviews. Well, you know, sometimes things that don't do well critically still do really well commercially. You know, Netflix came out and said, you know, I think it was Fuller House, that show. Fuller House was also on that list. You know, has done relatively well. You know, a lot of people actually like it, and the response was, you know, oh, this is fun and nostalgic, and people liked it. But the critics, of course, were like, this is stupid. Like, what a terrible idea on Netflix's part. So, you know, there's a little bit of misalignment there. You know, similarly with all the Adam Sandler movies that they keep pushing out, like, you know, Ted Sarandos, their chief content officer, kind of Reed Hastings' left-hand person, has commented, you know, those movies are probably the most watched content on Netflix, and some of them have zeros on Rotten Tomatoes. critics just don't line up. And I think Netflix is aware of that and definitely okay with it in, you know, the big picture.
Oh, yeah, because one of them on here was Marvel's Iron Fist. And I'll be honest, I hated that show. I thought it would have been number one. But I'm so glad Disjointed got it, because it must have been really bad if I didn't even see it.
Yeah, that the Iron Fist, that was interesting, because I think what you're up against, too, with the Marvel Universe is, you know, you're going to have people who are very passionate about, you know, those characters. And I think Netflix kind of took a bold shot on that one. But just, I think, as you know, you can attest, and I'm sure a lot of people will say, they just kind of missed it with that one. You know, I don't know what your stance was on Daredevil and Jessica Jones, but, you know, I like those quite a bit. And, you know, and of course, I'm still going to watch whatever they put out in the Marvel Universe, because it's so much fun. But
oh, absolutely. Jessica Jones, I think out of all of them, that one's my favorite.
Yeah, that one was spectacular.
You know, when it comes to streaming, I'm not sure. Could you clarify for me? I have Amazon Prime, and I'm not sure how this works. Like, I have BritBox and Acorn TV, and I'm like, is it something you subscribe to? Because I have no idea how I got those apps on my Amazon Prime.
I love Amazon Prime. I love that they have a huge library, and they're really, you know, trying to get into the streaming game. I think there's a tall tale that just a couple weeks ago, Jeff Bezos basically stormed into the Amazon Prime Video offices and was like, "I demand a Game of Thrones out of you," you know, and is putting a lot of pressure on that team, as you know, I think is kind of Amazon culture in a way, you know, to be the best and biggest of anything they do, streaming no exception. However, once again, I'm going to say this, I love their service dearly, but that is the biggest mess of an interface of any of the services. I think, you know, you go online and you can read, you know, people are like, "I love the content, but I don't know how to access it." It's not on half the streaming services the streaming devices that I use. Like,
I've been watching so much British shows lately because of Amazon Prime, and I just, you're right, I don't know how I accessed any of it, but I'm digging it, you know?
Yeah. No, Amazon's one to watch. They're going big on this. I mean, they are very specifically attacking Netflix. I mean, I'm sure Jeff Bezos has them in his sights saying, "I want that," or you know, he wants HBO. Like, you know, I was just saying, the story of him walking in and demanding a Game of Thrones. It's like, how do you expect him to do that? But like, they're throwing money at this thing like nobody's business. So, you know, I expect big things out of them. I think they've taken kind of a throw everything at the wall and see what sticks approach. But, you know, some things it's paying off. Like, they won an Oscar or something like that. You know, it's crazy that a little streaming service is, you know, being compared with these, you know, big time normal theater releases. So,
well, you know, all that competition is just good for the consumer, right?
Right. Yeah, I completely agree. Now, the only thing that I do complain about is how, you know, and you commented on it, like, if I want to try and watch a show, and, you know, 4 years ago, there was a pretty good chance it was on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Now it's like, is it on Hulu? Is it on Amazon? Is it on, you know, some the NBC-only streaming app or CBS All Access or whatever? You know, so it's getting more and more fragmented. And I think a lot of people, you know, instead of paying $12 a month or $10 a month for Netflix, it's now, you know, 10 for Netflix, 10 for Hulu, you know, 100 a year for Amazon, 15 for HBO. It got really expensive really quick.
Yeah, you're right. I might as well have just kept my TV cable network, right?
I know. It's you know, kind of, you know, as a cord cutter myself, I sometimes wonder if I'm, you know, insane for making it as complicated as I have on myself. Because, you know, it used to be so much easier, and now it's not. And, you know, it feels like somebody's going to come along and unify all these streaming services in one platform and say, access everything right from this hub. And then it's like, wait, isn't that just what cable is?
If it was my cousin, he'd probably say just get Cody, and I'm not sure I'd be willing to do it.
Yeah, right.
But you know, when it comes to streaming services, they always come out with some new stuff. Do you know what's new this month for Netflix and Hulu?
Yeah, I think the one thing everyone keeps talking about right now is Stranger Things, with Halloween, you know, a month away, and Netflix is brilliantly marketing it as like the Halloween show this year. I think the first season of that show, I don't think I've ever seen a series premiere get such high regard. I mean, that thing blew up. Like, I don't think Netflix could have even remotely predicted that.
Yeah.
So that one's definitely popular. I think, you know, when I look at Hulu, what's exciting this month isn't probably less what they're bringing as far as the back catalogs go. You know, it's TV premiere season, and I don't have cable, but Hulu does give me access to, you know, a pretty good portion of those, you know, shows that are going to be available, you know, the next day that they, you know, ultimately end up airing on TV. So it's like hard to argue with that. Netflix, of course, if you look at their list of what's coming this month, you know, each month it feels like there's more and more, you know, Netflix originals coming, and it's just, you know, it's overwhelming how many options they now put out.
All right, for Amazon Prime, I'll be honest, I don't know what's coming or leaving from it. It's a lot. Like, could you elaborate a little bit about that one?
Yeah, sure. So first and foremost, you know, Amazon doesn't actually tell us what's leaving. So back to their interface, you know, we have no idea. You know, but as far as kind of what's coming, they've got a couple originals coming out this month. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the podcast Lore. It's kind of like a horror podcast. They have a show coming out mid-October, right in time for Halloween, called, you know, it's called Lore, and it's an Amazon original that's coming. The Americans and American Horror Story have their previous seasons now streaming on there. You know, they've got a pretty good thing going with FX, I think, on those. They have that interesting deal with HBO where I think there's some things coming out. I'll have to check on that, but they're basically, as long as the HBO series is 5 months, or excuse me, 5 years old, they can start releasing seasons of it. So we expect some stuff to come out here pretty soon at the beginning of the year.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. And for the people who are listening, where can they find you at?
Yeah, they can find me at extremist.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're extremists at extremist news. You know, we update the website pretty regularly. So, you know, if you're looking for what's new on all these different services, hopefully we've got an article for you.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's masonverapaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.